It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester. Fine, you caught me. I'm not Bobby. I'm not obsessed with Kevin White. I don't put butter on my pizza. I've never worn jorts, at least not in public. Instead, I'm the vastly inferior, but slightly more handsome, Dan Harris. Now, if you listen to the podcast this week, first, congratulations on making a wise choice. But second, you know we're starting a Sunday night episode each week. We're recording this just after Sunday's main action, and in fact, right in the middle at the end of the late games. So this is right before Tags gets to watch the Bears take on the Packers on Sunday Night Football. So long as I don't totally screw up my first time as host, which admittedly is a distinct possibility, you guys should have this ready and waiting for you before you even wake up tomorrow. Now, though I've hijacked the podcast from Bobby, there's nothing to be concerned about. If you heard that little giggle over there, the other half of your unstoppable duo, Mike Tagliere, is and will always be here with me in full force. So, Tags, I appreciate you accepting this major downgrade in co-hosts and jumping on the Sunday night pod. On a scale of 1 to 10, how incredible was it to have a full day of actual football to watch and digest?
Oh, man, it's a 10 for sure. I mean, this is the day we were waiting for, right? To start getting some information, to start like realizing what depth charts actually look like, to see if we're right or wrong about certain things, to see if injuries are the real deal with players being held out. So, man, we have so much to cover in this episode. I'm just excited that we're doing a Sunday episode because it's something that we tried to cover like so fast on Mondays. So now we get to actually take our time, go through and touch on every game and give you guys the biggest fantasy takeaways.
Absolutely. So here's the plan. We're going to basically be walking through every game that's been played so far. We're going to give you our instant reactions and everything like that. By the way, you can find us on Twitter at Mike Tagliere NFL and at Dan Harris 80. So although we're going to be recapping every game from a fantasy standpoint, if you did happen to miss today's action, there's an even better way to catch up. That's NFL Game Pass. If you've been listening to us all preseason, then I hope you took advantage of NFL Game Pass to watch every out-of-market preseason game live. As a Jets fan living in New England, I certainly did. But if you didn't, and if you somehow haven't taken advantage of our awesome offer, you should do so immediately. Maybe life got in the way a bit during your Sunday and you weren't able to catch as much action as you wanted. Or maybe you spent your whole day watching the Red Zone channel and now want to go back and watch your favorite team's games from start to finish. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay any game you want after it's aired. And we had some great games this Sunday, like the shootout between the Buccaneers and the Saints, an entertaining showdown between the Seahawks and the Broncos, and an overtime bout with the Steelers and the Browns. But if you don't want to sit through the full broadcast replay, that's okay. You can get a condensed game version that takes only 45 minutes to watch. And even better, you get access to the All-22 Coaches film, what the actual coaches and the players see. And you can access everything across all your devices. Seriously, it's really an invaluable tool for any fantasy player or football fan in general. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at nfl.com/fantasypros. Game on. All right, Tags, we got a ton to get to, but before we get into every single game, let's just start with what's your biggest takeaway from the day?
that when the Bucks talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, like about Jameis Winston when he gets back into from his 3-game suspension, that he's not locked into a starting job, that Ryan Fitzpatrick took that to heart and went out there and just like completely obliterated the Saints defense. It was somewhat embarrassing.
So we're going to talk about that a little bit, but I guess I want to ask you one thing. Let's assume Ryan Fitzpatrick legitimately, I mean, he's not going to do this every week, obviously, but let's say he really does continue to play at a high level. Is Jameis Winston going to honestly come back and be as a backup, you think?
It's tough to say. Like with I know that the Bucs faced a lot of turmoil, like when they heard about this Jameis Winston thing and that they should cut him from the roster. And I think that's why they in part said it. But I think we have to go back to, you know, like, what was it, the 2015 season where Ryan Fitzpatrick was really good with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker that year. So it's very possible that Mike Evans, you know, Chris Godwin and DeSean Jackson, that trio is just going to make him look really good. So, I mean, I'm not going to take too much away from one game, but it was mighty impressive.
Yeah, it really was kind of remarkable, especially given that the Saints defense obviously improved last year. We were all expecting it to be good. The Saints were, I believe, 10-point favorites coming into the game. So it was really remarkable. But we'll get to that game in specific because, quite frankly, there was a ton of fantasy goodness pretty much for every single player. But before that, let's start with Thursday night game real quick, just because we haven't had a chance to touch on it. I know you guys on the podcast. So that was the Eagles 18, Falcons 12. And the only thing I really want to talk about, and it's something that you've basically been defending the honor of every single fantasy analyst that contributed to the ECR this week, which is Jay Ajayi. We all kind of had him as maybe a borderline RB2, if that, coming in. And he went for 15 for 62 with 2 touchdowns and a 2-point conversion. So, I mean, you know, did that game change your outlook on Ajayi for the full season?
No, guys, we shouldn't be results-based oriented. Like, and I understand results have to matter, like, because in the end, we want fantasy points. But in the end, snaps equal fantasy points, and we wanted to see more snaps. I know he scored 2 touchdowns, but keep in mind, Keanu Neal, their starting safety, was out of the lineup on both of those touchdowns. Keep in mind that Deion Jones, their starting stud linebacker, was off the field for his first touchdown. He played 32 snaps in the game. Darren Sproles played 33. Like, that's really concerning, because if you go through and look at history, running backs just don't produce very consistently when they're getting that few of snaps. Now, I do want to say this. After the game, Doug Peterson said it was in the game plan that Jay Ajayi hadn't practiced very much and they wanted to ease him back into action and that they're going to get him more snaps going forward. If he gets into 40 snaps a game territory, that's when I'm going to start to trust him. I mean, as of right now, though, if he keeps playing like 33 snaps per game as he's done with the Eagles, it's going to be very up and down production and you're going to have to rely on touchdowns for production like you did this week. I mean, there were so many people panicking at halftime. They had no idea what they were going to do with Jay Ajayi, and now they're celebrating. So I'm kind of in between. Like, if he stays with those snaps, I'm selling. But I'm going to hold for a week just to see if they do, in fact, raise his snap count. Because if they do, Jay Ajayi is going to be a much better running back than any of us thought. Because, again, he plays behind an offensive line that's probably the best in the NFL. And the offense is only going to get better once Carson Wentz returns.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for me, honestly, is he was injured coming into the game. So in particular, for the week one, I don't see how you could have been bullish on him, because even the amount of snaps that he got, I think, was almost more than we were thinking. I am certainly encouraged, like you, if he is going to get an increase in snaps, which it sounds like he will. And he looked great, obviously, and he's an effective runner, but obviously Sproles and Clement will still come in. But anyway, I did want to touch on that very briefly before we go. But by this point, everybody has moved on and is ready for Sunday action. So let's start going through it. Let's start with the Vikings 24, 49ers 16. Now, for me, honestly, of all the games we're going to talk about, I felt like for the most part, this one kind of met my expectations the most. Kirk Cousins had a solid, if unspectacular game. Dalvin Cook was pretty solid. But I'm a little worried. Do you think Latavius Murray had 11 carries to Dalvin Cook's 16? I mean, is Murray going to get this much of a workload every game, or do you think it was more of like a game flow type of thing?
I mean, it was relatively a close game throughout. It was never like a blowout between the two teams, so I do seem to think like it's going to be more of a timeshare than people thought. I do think it's going to be like 60-40, but the reason that you want to like Dalvin Cook more than most is because what he does in the field, as he's a 3-down back, whereas Latavius, they're going to use him first and second down. They racked up 32 carries as a team today. That's not going to happen every week. So therefore, Latavius is the one who's going to lose those carries when they're in games where maybe they're not ahead as much as they were in this game. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're playing from behind a little bit on the road, and Latavius is the one who loses those carries because he wasn't involved in the passing game at all. He didn't catch a single pass, whereas Dalvin Cook saw 7 targets. So I think Dalvin Cook is probably someone that you want to look at buying in fantasy leagues, if I'm being honest, just because I think the game, it just called for it. It was his first game back from the ACL. I know they said there was no snap count, but I'm not too worried about Latavius Murray, whereas Dalvin Cook's production, I think it's going to come a lot from the passing game when the games are a little bit a different game script. So I'm not necessarily worried. I still think Latavius Murray is just more of like a handcuff.
Yeah, and even today he did get the 7 targets, as you said. Even with the positive game script, he still had 6 catches for 55 yards, right? So you're plenty satisfied if you own Cook, especially in any sort of format that rewards anything for catches or anything like that. The receivers all kind of did what we thought. Adam Thielen, 102 yards on 6 catches. Stephon Diggs got the touchdown. Rudolph just got the 1 catch for 11 yards, but he obviously got the touchdown. But there's nothing really. I think this is about what we thought. They're going to be a good offense. The passing game is going to give you enough production in fantasy. As for the 49ers, Jimmy G, I mean, not a great day, obviously. 15 for 33 for 261 yards and a touchdown with 3 interceptions. Do you have any concerns about this, or are you willing just to write it off given the matchup?
Yeah, I had Jimmy Garoppolo outside my top 22 quarterbacks this week. I think I had him at QB 23, so I wasn't expecting much out of him. The where I was watching this game was, you know, with obviously the wide receivers, I wanted to see the snap count difference between Dante Pettis and Trent Taylor. There was an injury to Marquise Goodwin during this game. Marquise Goodwin, he left the game for a while. He ended up returning in the second half, so it seems like he's going to be okay. I want to say it was a quad issue. He returned to the game, but he only saw 1 target the entire game. So I don't know how effective he was in returning, but Dante Pettis looked like legit. Like, he was out there running crisp routes. I was watching a lot of that game. He looked good. So he's actually someone that I'm definitely interested in a speculative ad on the waiver wire this week. But looking at the running back situation between Alfred Morris and Matt Breida, Alfred Morris fumbled, and that's obviously not going to do him any favors going forward. He did have a 12-11 lead in the carry category. But again, this is a game that should have favored Matt Breida a little bit more. If the 49ers are winning, it seems like Alfred Morris is the clear-cut 1-2 down back here, who's going to have, like, you kind of have to pay attention to game scripts, right? So that was the big storyline for me, but we need to pay attention to Marquise Goodwin, and if that injury does, you know, cause him to miss some time.
Yeah, and the one thing I think is that Goodwin actually, after he came back in, I think that he had to leave again, which obviously is not a good sign for his availability. Now, we don't know. We have no idea. Again, we're recording this at, you know, 7:30 on Sunday night. We don't know exactly what his availability is, but it's obviously something to keep an eye on. Regarding Morris, just to touch on that, the fumble that he lost was on the goal line, right? They were about to get in. That's pretty much the only place you don't want to go. And if you were watching, you could see basically Kyle Shanahan say, "You can't do that to him," as he walked off the field. Now, he did continue to get carries and carries in the red zone after that. So I think I'm inclined to agree. First and second down, I think Morris is really the guy to go. The only other thing I'll say about this game is George Kittle. I mean, he was injured for most of the preseason, but a lot of us liked him given the offense. 5 catches on 9 targets for 90 yards. I mean, he's a must-own tight end, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, every time I turned around, George Kittle was getting another target. It seemed like he was targeted even more than 9 times. I don't know if there were penalties that called back some of these plays, but seriously, it just seemed like he was targeted so much throughout this game, and it's obvious that he's the clear-cut leader.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely was the guy who waited on tight end in a lot of leagues, and he was the guy I targeted every time. Injuries are really the only thing I think can stop him, and it was a tough matchup. So for me, Kittle is definitely a must-own. I think he's going to be pretty, you know, a borderline, but definitely within the top 12. All right, Tags, next game is Patriots 27, Texans 20. Just an ugly game all around. What's the biggest thing that you're taking out of this?
Yeah, if you watch this game, it was pretty ugly. I mean, I know Tom Brady walked away with 3 touchdowns and 277 yards, but it was an ugly, ugly, ugly game. Deshaun Watson's the biggest storyline here. And to know that we obviously talked about him throughout the entire offseason, saying, don't buy this guy as the number one quarterback in Dynasty just because he had a good 5 games. I mean, Blake Bortles has put together a 5-game stretch where he looked pretty dang good. And I think we know who Blake Bortles is at this point in his career. Deshaun Watson might not be as bad as he played today, but it was pathetic. I mean, it was so bad. He looked like a puppy that couldn't find his way home. Like, that's the best way for me to describe it. Like, he had Ryan Griffin open on a post route over the middle, and he threw it 7 yards over his head, 3 yards behind him. And DeAndre Hopkins, the reaction was priceless. It was almost like Allen Robinson when Blake Bortles would continually overthrow him in practice. And he's like, come on, man. So DeAndre Hopkins just threw his head back like, oh my God, here we go again. I mean, the guy's been through so many bad quarterback changes that I don't think that DeAndre Hopkins can take it anymore. But it was an ugly game on Deshaun Watson's part. That's my biggest takeaway from this one.
So realistically, I mean, you obviously aren't going to update your rest of season rankings off the cuff, but what are you going to do with Watson? Are you going to move him down significantly, do you think?
No, I mean, I had him as the QB6 or QB7 in my season-long rankings. And the thing, I was never going to end up with him ranking him there because he was going as the QB2 in, like, every single league. But the thing is like, he's still going to offer some fantasy upside. His legs, I mean, he ran for 40 yards today. He ended up throwing a touchdown. So he gave you some fantasy points. But in the end, it's all about, like, is he really going to be this good? There's not going to be many teams that are hanging 27 points on that Texans front seven. So I just don't know how many attempts he's really going to rack up as the year goes on. He also lost his starting right tackle in this game, seemingly for the year. So the offensive line struggles just continue to get worse for him.
Yeah, there may be a lot of scrambling and gaining some more rushing yards than we even expected, a la Russell Wilson last year behind that porous offensive line. Regarding the Patriots, the only thing is obviously Chris Hogan had just the one catch for 11 yards. Super disappointing. But is Philip Dorsett a thing now? Caught all seven of his targets for 66 yards and a score?
Yeah, he looked like he took on like the Brandon Cooks role in the offense, and he did a fine job doing that. I think we could look at him as someone like John Ross, where it's like if you need someone, you're looking for some upside to toss in your lineup. I think that he's worth a pickup, but if you find someone, like let's say that you're able to grab him off the waiver wire right now and someone wants to trade you for him, I'm open to doing that for sure. I'm also into buying Chris Hogan for cheap. It just seemed like the game plan wasn't directed at him today. They didn't look his way all that often. I don't think they had the time to do what they wanted to with the offense with the way that the Texans bring their pass rush. So to know that Chris Hogan had one catch for 11 yards, you should be able to buy him relatively cheap after this game, and I suggest doing so.
Yeah, I completely 100% agree. I have a lot of shares of Hogan coming in. This game doesn't move the needle for me at all. But I do agree that Dorsett is somebody to look at on your waiver wire. He had a good preseason, and he seems to have a good rapport with Brady, and filling that Cooks role is certainly a productive spot for any wide receiver. All right, Tags, moving on. Bengals 34, Colts 23. So let's just get right into the guy who we've been waiting to see in a regular season game for more than 600 days, and that's Andrew Luck. I mean, look, threw the ball 53 times, okay? I mean, so you, are your concerns completely allayed at this point?
I mean, the way that he was throwing his body around, chasing a guy after he was intercepted, after a fumble that they ended up calling back. And, like, I mean, I think that he's as healthy as he's ever going to be. This is Andrew Luck as he's going to be. He only threw for 6 yards per attempt against the Bengals defense that, I mean, their starting safety was thrown out at the beginning of the game for a hit on him. He didn't look great. He didn't look like he was in sync, but it also just looked like he made some bad decisions. Like his interception that he had, it was on his first throw of the game, actually, to Jack Doyle. He forced the ball into double coverage, and it was just like the easiest thing to see coming. I think Ryan Grant actually was more involved than I thought he was going to be, and I love it. I mean, he saw 9 targets, but he was used in a very underneath role. It was different than what we've seen out of Ryan Grant, but I think Andrew Luck's going to be competent in this offense. That's how I see it. I don't see them having a very good run game because Jordan Wilkins looked very mediocre. Naheem Hines is essentially a Gio Bernard, a worse version of Gio Bernard, and Christian Michael, I think we just know who he is. So I do believe that Andrew Luck is going to be throwing the ball an awful lot in this offense, so he's going to be a back-end QB1. I just don't know if we're ever going to see the Andrew Luck that, you know, we all kind of wanted at one point.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, especially on Grant. 8 catches for 59 yards, surprising. I really like the way they used him. And frankly, I mean, are both Eric Ebron and Jack Doyle viable tight end ones at this point?
Eric Ebron was involved so much more than I thought he would be. Jack Doyle's obviously their possession guy, but Eric Ebron was being used as like a wide receiver. So yeah, I do think he's going to have viability. It's tough. It's really tough to say that they're both not going to be, because the reason that you never wanted to is because two tight ends in the same team almost never work out. Like, it just doesn't happen, right? But knowing that T.Y. Hilton and Ryan Grant are really the only two options and that Chester Rogers is just a guy, they might need to use Eric Ebron is more than that. So, I mean, he's definitely someone that you want to grab off the waiver wire. He might turn into like a streaming play. And this was a good matchup. Let's be honest about that. The Bengals were not a good team against tight ends. They didn't have Vontaze Burfict for this game. So we all like Jack Doyle for a reason. They both combined, obviously, to have a really good game. Even Doyle had 7 catches for 60 yards. So I don't want to say that they're going to have viability every single week, but in matchups, sure.
Yeah, and I think, frankly, if he is going to throw 53 times, then those targets have to go somewhere, and there just aren't that many options in the passing game. So if it is a game script where it's going to require Luck to throw a lot, I definitely think that both guys are going to be viable pretty much on a weekly basis, just at least to the extent the matchup is relatively favorable. On the other side of the ball, I mean, you know, Andy Dalton, you know, it was a good matchup for him, and that's kind of what we expected. But boy, Joe Mixon really kind of impressive today. 17 carries for 95 yards and a touchdown, 5 catches for 54 yards. I don't know how you thought about him before the season started. I was a little bearish on him. I don't know. I kind of had a Gio Bernard sort of yelling in my ear thinking that he might be a thing. He is not a thing. It is the Joe Mixon show. Are you fully buying into him being an RB1 and a strong one at that?
Oh yeah, I mean the thing is so Bobby and I had a bet going into the season. I had Joe Mixon, he had Christian McCaffrey. So I was obviously a Joe Mixon believer. I still am. Today did nothing to change that for me. The Bengals used him in a really good way too. Like I am extremely happy about him getting 22 touches and Gio Bernard getting 2. That's not going to keep up at that ratio, but I like the fact that they didn't press the issue with running the football with him. Like they I think they understand the limitations of their offensive line, so they started using the screen game quite a bit to go to Mixon. And the interception that Dalton threw in the first quarter, that was not on Joe Mixon. He was targeting Mixon in that play, and it was like a loft, like a Tom Brady loft to one of his running backs, but it was just a bad throw. And he put Mixon in a really bad spot. But Mixon looked really good. It was a good matchup. He's going to be playing the Ravens on Thursday Night Football, so I think people are going to come back down to earth a little bit on Joe Mixon. But he is going to have better matchups than the one that he has this Thursday night, just like the one he had this week. So, yeah, Mixon did exactly what I thought he'd do.
Yeah, 100%. Again, I mean, for this week, of course, I was definitely bullish on him. But as a whole coming in, I wanted to see it, and now I've certainly seen it. So I have zero concerns going forward. Strong RB1 for me. Before we keep going, Tags, I do want to mention that it has been, obviously, a long day of football. And when we're done with this podcast, I'm going to head upstairs and lie down and watch the Bears-Packers game on my Lisa mattress. True story. A couple of months ago, my wife got a new job and she was complaining about how exhausted she was in the morning and how hard it was to focus. And I'd heard about the Lisa mattress right here on this podcast, and I decided to go for it. And it was definitely one of the best decisions that I've ever made. Shipped directly to my door in a convenient box, cost a fraction of what most mattresses cost. And really, you don't realize how poorly you're sleeping until you switch to a truly high-quality mattress. A quality night's sleep helps you recover from distractions faster, prevents burnout, make better decisions, improve your memory, and overall make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing. It's science. The Lisa mattress is the product of more than 30 years of experience in mattress engineering and hundreds of hours of testing, comprised of 3 foam layers that provide cooling pressure relief, body contouring, and support. The Lisa mattress is the best mattress at the best value. Lisa's mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody. Through their 110 program, they donate 1 mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. Lisa strives to leave the world better than they found it. That doesn't stop with mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants 1 tree for every mattress they sell and are committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. And the best part is, if you use our offer code, you'll get $160 off Lisa's already low prices. So do yourself a favor and go to lisa.com/fantasypros. That's LEESA.com/fantasypros. In the next game, which probably was the worst game I've ever seen, was the Steelers 21 and the Browns 21. Maybe the first week one tie in our lifetime, Tags? I'm not really sure. huge weather concerns coming in, but it turned out it wasn't a big deal. Let's talk about James Conner. Obviously, a monster day. He did lose a fumble that kind of turned the tide of the game, but a huge day. What impact, I guess I'll ask 2 questions. First, what impact do you think, if any, that this game has specifically on when Le'Veon Bell is going to return? And regardless, if Conner is the starter, where do you think he's going to wind up in your weekly ranks?
I don't think Le'Veon's coming back. I think that the whole week 10 thing is a real thing, because like, what? Why would he have incentive to show up next week when he didn't show up this week? Like, if he doesn't care about $850,000 this week, he's probably not going to care about it next week. The Steelers haven't changed their position on this, and knowing that James Conner just played the way he did, I don't think that they feel the need to have Bell come back. I mean, I know Bell's, like, the thing is, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that James Conner can just do everything Le'Veon Bell can, but he had a very impressive day against a tough Cleveland run defense that was really, really good last year. The game conditions definitely did play into his favor, especially considering the type of running back that he is. He's difficult to bring down. Like, he's like one of those Marshawn Lynch type running backs where he's going to break a lot of tackles, and racking up 31 carries, it kind of tells us everything we need to know, that they are letting him take over the exact role that Le'Veon Bell had in this offense, maybe with a few less targets, and that's fine, but still, man, when you get that type of volume, he's an RB1 every single week.
Yeah, I mean, he looked awesome. And not just sort of, you know, you think of the Browns, you know, without really thinking about it, you're like, well, you know, the Browns aren't a very good football team, so Connor could catch him, but they have a decent run defense. It's not as if he just ran over, you know, a nobody. This was really, really impressive. And if you were watching him, he's decisive. He moves quick. I was really impressed. I'm wondering, and again, this is all speculation on our part, because, you know, we all thought Le'Veon Bell was going to report probably by week one and collect his game checks. I'm wondering what it does in terms of making him realize, you know what, maybe they don't really care, or maybe it sort of hurts my value if James Conner comes in there and just sort of tears it up in terms of what people are looking at. Either way, he clearly overvalues himself if he thinks he's going to get like a Todd Gurley deal anyway. I have no idea when he's going to come back, but I own Bell on in two leagues, and I handcuffed him with Connor in both because I think that's what you needed to do at that point to get him. So if you own Connor, congratulations. If you own Bell, sounds like it might be a while. On the other side of the ball, you know, the Browns, they provided some decent fantasy production. Josh Gordon found the end zone despite being limited in snaps. Carlos Hyde, any big takeaways from the Cleveland side of the ball?
I mean, Jarvis Landry with 15 targets. I don't know if this was like, I don't know if it was the wisest game plan either, because Jarvis Landry was, he had the toughest matchup, I think, of all receivers. Like, he was matched up with Mike Hilton in the slot. Mike Hilton played really, really well last year. So, I mean, it's really weird. David Njoku going down with an ankle injury. I don't know if that affected anything. But Josh Gordon, I know they said that he was limited snaps, but he played 69 snaps. Jarvis Landry played 81. So it's not like Josh Gordon was like extremely limited to where he wasn't on the field. He was the second highest wide receiver in terms of snaps. So I'm not worried about Josh Gordon going forward. This was just a really bad game by Tyrod Taylor. I don't know if the conditions, they didn't look as bad as people said that they were going to be, but 15 of 40 passing? Ew.
Look, I just don't think Tyrod Taylor is that good. I think he's fine for fantasy purposes, because especially because he runs, but he is so inaccurate. At least every time I watch him, this is sort of a garden variety kind of just looking at the games and sort of giving my impression. You know, I'm a Jets fan. I watch a lot of Patriots games because I live in New England. I see Tyrod a lot. He's just always struck me as a wholly inaccurate quarterback, at least over last year. And as he got into the playoffs, I remember watching, and I remember just it being awful to watch. So for me, look, I don't know. But either way, obviously, the both receivers got good production, and the offense was able to move the ball and give the guys enough. So it's going to be fine going forward. I'm sure Mayfield will take over eventually. But for now, you know, if you own pretty much any Browns skills player, you're pretty satisfied at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
Can't say the same if you own a Bills skills player, to the extent there are any. I mean, Nathan Peterman, I feel like this is when you go to a movie that has like terrible reviews and you're like, well, I mean, it can't be that bad, right? I mean, I'm gonna, whatever, it'll be fine. And it is worse than advertised. He had 24 yards passing
on 18 attempts.
I mean, what? I don't, I just, not, it's not real. It's like if I played my son on Madden right now, who's five, you know, it would be like, oh, sorry, buddy, you don't know what you're doing at all. You know, they brought in Josh Allen and he struggled, not quite as bad. I don't really get that, by the way. If I agree with, I don't want to start Josh Allen behind this porous offensive line against a really good defense.
On the road in Baltimore.
I totally get that.
Yep.
But I do not get then saying like, okay, well, now come in the middle of the game, right?
Yeah, now we're going to bring you in on the road in Baltimore. That was stupid.
Now it's okay, right? Makes no sense. I mean, where are you on LeSean McCoy right now? 7 rushes for 22 yards. How concerned are you?
This was always going to be a bad game for him. Like, I thought he would have more receptions. I didn't look at the snaps this game quite yet because I hadn't really cared to get to it. I'll pull it up now just because LeSean McCoy, 34 snaps. Marcus Murphy played 23. So obviously they benched him after the game was out of control, because I did expect him to get some receptions in this game. I always knew that they were going to stop the run. I want to say the numbers I had on the Ravens last year was they allowed 2.9 yards per carry while at home. It was always going to be a terrible matchup, especially with Peterman under center. Again, I was just hoping for the receptions. They didn't even get that. So it was ugly. There's going to be better weeks, but the Ravens are a team. Like I said, Joe Mixon plays them on Thursday night. You're going to see they're an excellent run defense. I'm not going to like literally take everything away from this. The fact that LeSean McCoy is not going to get suspended is like the biggest takeaway, I think, from the news today, because there's no charges expected to be pressed by the police department. So I don't know. It seems okay, but he's going to be what he is. Like, he's going to be like a mediocre RB2 most weeks, just because he's going to get a lot of volume. And I think Josh Allen's actually going to help, because Josh Allen is more of like a mobile quarterback, where he's like, I compared him to Cam Newton in my process, because like the inaccuracy issues, the big body guy, he's got a big arm, but he's often inaccurate. I just think a mobile quarterback like Josh Allen should be able to help LeSean McCoy. And by the way, Josh Allen ran for 26 yards today, even though he only played for the one half. So McCoy, he is what he is, and you probably got him in like the fourth or fifth round, so you're not like majorly upset about it, but it's not going to be a great season, I'll say that.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, although the one thing is, do we know for sure that Allen's going to start next week? He obviously should, because Nathan Peterman is borderline incompetent, but they're against the Chargers. If you wanted to protect him before, why do you want to just throw him to the Wolves now?
Oh yeah, it's definitely not great, but I think that with how bad Peterman is, I don't think they could even like justify it. Like, the fact that they benched Peterman that fast, it just tells me that they were on the fence. I think they were on the fence about playing Allen in week one to begin with, and I think this just did him in. So I do think he plays. I think he starts for them. If he doesn't, it's going to be even worse news for LeSean McCoy. But on the other side of the ball, I do want to touch on this before we move to the next game, is that Alex Collins, some people will look at the box score and think, oh my God, Kenneth Dixon's the starting running back. He had 13 carries to Collins' 7. So Alex Collins actually started this game, and Alex Collins scored a touchdown early on, and I was excited because I loved him this week. He was a great play. And then he fumbled, and then he found himself on the bench. If you guys do recall, Bobby's actually brought it up a few times in the podcast this preseason where Alex Collins had fumble issues at the beginning of last season, and that's why he wasn't playing a whole lot. He fixed them, and then they started playing him towards the end of the season. He didn't fumble. But to know that he's on that short of a leash is scary. So for me, what I would do is I would wait until he has a good game, which I mean, I don't necessarily know if it's this week or not against the Bengals, and they're going to be without Vontaze Burfict, so it's very possible. But once he has a big week, I'm selling, because what it tells me is that the leash for him is so incredibly short that you want no part of that on your fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I will point out is at no point was this game in doubt, even in the beginning, sort of, right? So it was over. So it's definitely something that is possible that it's more of a message thing as opposed to a, oh man, I am just, we are pulling you any game situation. We are pulling you if you fumble. Bobby was absolutely right. He has struggled with fumble issues his whole career. That was sort of what they were worried about last year. And eventually he earned their trust. But I agree, it's concerning. The fact that he fumbled, number one, just don't fumble. Do whatever you need to do. Put Stickum on your darn, you know, hands or whatever. Just do something, because that is a real risk. So I'm glad you brought that up, because fantasy owners do need to worry about that. Look, Joe Flacco is not a thing, but do you get a little bit of a 2017 Alex Smith type vibe going on with him a little bit, right? Like, the veteran hasn't really done anything, kind of been conservative. They draft the heir apparent and suddenly he's going to start airing it out. Or, I mean, and again, I don't mean to suggest like, oh, he's a QB1, you know, in a 12 team leagues or something like that. But I mean, is he going to be a guy who you can consider streaming in the right matchup at this point?
I mean, he was somebody I said that it's weird, and I wrote in the primer saying that there's certain people that are motivated by different things, and I think that Joe Flacco, I think we've seen, I mean, throughout the preseason and now into week one, we've seen a different quarterback than we saw last year, and I think that the Lamar Jackson draft pick gave him like a kick in the butt that he kind of needed, because I think he had been coasting on his Super Bowl win, and like he was a franchise quarterback, and I think it just happens with everyone, and it's not just football players, right? Like, people get comfortable in their jobs, and then sometimes there's something that comes up that's like, oh my God, like, what could happen? Like, I haven't thought about the fact that I could lose my job. And I think it gave him a kick in the butt that he needed. And he looked really good today. He looked really good in the preseason. So yeah, I think in good matchups, you're going to want to stream him. I don't think that, again, this Thursday night, they're going to be playing against the Bengals. I don't think it's like a great matchup for him, but yeah, man, definitely watch. Keep paying attention to Joe Flacco, because there was not a single game last year where he threw 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, he was definitely a target of mine in 2 quarterback leagues as a very, very cheap QB2, because this really looked like it was happening in the preseason. He looked great. And sometimes, exactly what you said, people need a kick in the butt sometimes, and that's pretty much exactly what he got. The receivers, Crabtree, John Brown, and Willie Snead all catch touchdown passes. And you and I both loved John Brown last year, and he's a good guy. He was on the podcast at that point. So I really just wanted to make sure I mentioned that, and I really hope he can stay healthy, because the dude's got great talent. Next, Jaguars 20, Giants 15. The big thing here, obviously, is the Leonard Fournette injury. He looked great before he left. 9 carries for 41 yards, 3 catches for 14 yards. I mean, we're recording this on Sunday night. I don't know if they've come out and said how severe the hamstring injury is, but TJ Yeldon was serviceable, obviously, in his stead. If Fournette is seriously injured, I mean, what percent of your fab are you going to put on TJ Yeldon?
So none, because I own a TJ Yeldon in every single league, Dan. So on the podcast, I was talking about why he shouldn't have been considered in the territory of guys like Tariq Cohen, like Chris Thompson, like Giovanni Bernard, because he's going to have a role on the team. Like, he was going to be the primary, I don't want to say primary passing down back, but he was going to rack up receptions. I mean, last year with Fournette, with Chris Ivory, he had 41 targets in 10 games. So he was involved then. And so now, I was not shocked to see him come in and play well. I do think that he's going to be a fantastic waiver wire ad. I can't say what fab I'd use just yet, because I need to look at the landscape. We're going to have that on the waiver wire show later in the week. But he's definitely someone that should be owned in every league, because, I mean, they're playing the Patriots next week. And the fact that Leonard Fournette is, like, when he left the game with a hamstring, I was like, why are people expecting him to come back? Like, oh, is he going to come back to the game? Hamstrings don't get better by standing on the sideline for 20 seconds, guys. It's going to take time. Soft tissue. We saw last year, they took their time getting him back, and he wasn't the same player when they rushed him back. So I think they're going to take their time with Fournette. I think TJ Yeldon starts next week, and I think that, honestly, I'm going to rank him as a must-play RB2 against the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree that certainly if he starts, he really did look good. He scored the touchdown. So he's certainly a viable option, and kudos to you for owning him, because I certainly wasn't thinking about him in most leagues. Other than that, in the Jaguars, I mean, Blake Bortles is not a good football player. Nobody on the wide receiving core really established themselves. I personally, tags for me, Keelan Cole is still the guy to own. I don't know what you think.
He's still the guy for sure. I mean, he only had 4 targets today, but he also saw a bunch of Janoris Jenkins in coverage, and that's always going to limit players because Janoris Jenkins is really good. So it's a small sample size, but D.D. Westbrook, 6 targets, Dante Moncrief, 5. They both out-targeted him, which is kind of concerning.
Yeah, it definitely is. But in the end, I still think, you know, for me, talent wins out. And for me, I'm a big fan of Cole. So I think in the end, he's going to be the one who has the most value. Obviously, the Jaguars DST get some points with Miles Jack, pick 6. So that's pretty good from the Giants. I mean, I don't think there's too much of a takeaway other than Saquon Barkley is ridiculous. if you didn't see his touchdown run, go get yourself NFL Game Pass and watch it from every conceivable angle. It was preposterous. But really, Tags, is there anything that you can take away here from the Giants game against an obviously very difficult defense?
No, I talked about Saquon Barkley, and like legitimately what happened in this game is exactly what you should expect from Saquon Barkley. And the fact that I said he's going to be maddening because he's a guy that's going to lose carries. Like he's willing to take some losses in order to get a big gain. And it happened. 68-yard touchdown. Like that touchdown was ridiculous. There were a few other wow plays that I watched too, where it's like, yeah, we know this guy's a freak. He's just an athlete that can overcome certain things that other running backs can't do. And he has the power to push a pile too. So once he learns how to run behind that offensive line, because he's a little too patient behind that offensive line that's not quite good. And again, it was welcome to the NFL, kid. You're playing the Jaguars. It was a tough matchup, but Saquon Barkley's the real deal.
Yeah, and all the people who always talk about how running backs don't matter, when you get really an elite running back like this guy, I mean, just watch it. It was really, I mean, that run, if you have not seen it, please just stop. Just go watch it. It's really amazing. I agree. Odell survives 11 catches for 111 yards. Obviously, nothing too big. Good defense, you know, mediocre offense. So we'll move on to the game we touched on before. Bucks 48, Saints 40. I mean, shocking. We've already talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick. All of the wide receivers for the Bucks get into the end zone. And I mean, DeSean Jackson, I know he got hurt at the end, but 5 catches, 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. Were we all undervaluing him coming into the season?
You know what's so funny is that when best ball season started, like back in, like, you know, I'm talking like April, May time, before even before the NFL draft, I was doing some best balls. I got DeSean Jackson as like the 60th wide receiver, and I kept getting him, and I felt like really odd about it, because I'm like, am I missing something here? Like, why is this guy not being drafted in the best ball league? That's like ideally where you want him, because you just never know when these games are going to come. But I didn't think Fitzpatrick. I honestly had written off DeSean Jackson for the first 3 weeks with Ryan Fitzpatrick, because he doesn't have a big arm to get the ball down the field. And like, honestly, he put everything he had into the first DeSean Jackson touchdown. Like, his body was flailing. It was fantastic. But yeah, it was. I don't think you should expect this. I think Chris Godwin showed me a lot. Mike Evans against Marshawn Lattimore. Like, Mike Evans looked nasty today. Like, he actually looked like a wide receiver that. He used that athletic ability, that big frame, and he played so well. Like, I've ragged on Mike Evans before for, like, I think he relies on his size sometimes too much, and he's kind of, like, lackadaisical. He looked fantastic today.
Oh, he looked amazing. And frankly, Mike Evans was a guy who every single time I looked at my rankings and every time I was in a draft, I just kept thinking, like, I feel like I should probably be taking Mike Evans here, and I just never did. I don't know why. It was just something where you're like, ugh, he looked so lazy last year. Maybe he just doesn't really feel into it. But, man, he looked fantastic today, and it wasn't just because Ryan Fitzpatrick played out of his mind. If you watched him, he looked great. So he's going to be a superstar this year. Do you even own Ronald Jones at this point? He was a healthy scratch. Is he worth owning? Peyton Barber was fine, 19 for 69 yards, but not special. But I don't even know what you do with him at this point.
Yeah, Ronald Jones, it's funny because my wife dropped him in our home league before the game started, and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh my god, how much fab should I spend? And I was like, wait a minute, should I even spend anything?
Right.
It's to the point now where if he's an inactive, it's not good. And Peyton Barber didn't do anything to lose his job here. He played fine. He wasn't great. Jaquizz Rodgers is who he is at this point. Like, he's a passing down back, and they didn't need him much for this game. So it's really odd to see the Bucs score 48 points and none of it come from their running game outside of Ryan Fitzpatrick scoring his rushing touchdown. But yeah, Ronald Jones, he's someone that I wouldn't mind having at the end of my bench, but I also, if you need a starter, like if you have Le'Veon Bell, if you have Julian Edelman, if you have Mark Ingram, and you need a starter, yeah, I'm okay cutting him.
Yeah, what about Cameron Brate? No catches on 2 targets. Obviously, O.J. Howard has a little more production. Is Brate worth owning at this point?
No, once you get outside like the top like 14 tight ends, I felt like that's when you stream tight ends and you just kind of play the matchups. So Cameron Brate wasn't on any of my fantasy teams. He, and looking back last year towards the end of the season, he wasn't getting very many targets. So O.J. Howard is the better player. He's the guy that they drafted to take that position. The contract extension they gave Brate was always odd, in my opinion. I have no idea why, but it is what it is at this point. But on the other sideline, Michael Thomas, I actually moved him up to my number one wide receiver this week. Like, I realized it when I was putting my cash games together. I wanted Michael Thomas everywhere. And I kept telling myself, I'm like, they don't have it. Brent Grimes is out. They just don't have the talent to hang with this kid. 16 catches for 180 yards and a touchdown. And they're actually, it should have been over 200 yards and two touchdowns, but they blew a touchdown dead. Literally nothing happened, but there was a weird whistle that was blown, so they had to call it back. It should have been like 240 yards and two touchdowns. Like, Michael Thomas is absolutely freaking ridiculous. And I said it, I believe that next year he's in the running for the number one wide receiver off the board.
Yeah, he was remarkable in this game. And he was really great last year. He kind of got dinged because he didn't score as many touchdowns. But he is really, really phenomenal. And again, go back and watch the game. He really was incredible. As was Drew Brees, as was Alvin Kamara. I mean, it was really just a show. You don't need us to tell you that those guys are fantastic. But in case you were wondering, worrying about Drew Brees or anything like that, look, if the Saints defense is going to play that bad, he's going to be throwing quite a bit. Do you think, by the way, just before we move on to a different game, do you think Ted Ginn or Teddy Ginn, as Bobby would say, you think he can be a viable kind of third wide receiver, especially if Cameron Meredith is out?
I don't think that he's going to be that guy. I think it's going to be very game script dependent. And obviously, knowing that Drew Brees threw the ball, what was it, like 45 times, 50 times, something like that. That's why Ted Ginn saw what he did. He left the game with 6 targets, 5 catches, 68 yards, and a touchdown. So it wasn't like a massive game for Ginn. But if you go back and look at the games last year, he had games like this. He was very, very boom or bust. It was almost like all or nothing. Like, if he doesn't score a touchdown, he's going to let you down. So you look at the high scoring games this week, we knew it was. So I guess you could have said that Ted Ginn would have been a good DFS start, is kind of like a contrarian play to Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. And it would have worked out, obviously, you know, with what he did. But it's going to be very hit or miss. So you just want to play him in matchups where they have a really soft secondary like the Bucs do.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to the final, what should have been the final 1 o'clock game, but is actually the last game to end on the normal slate, which is the Dolphins versus the Titans, which was delayed substantially by weather concerns. I assume it was lightning. So I haven't really had a chance. I wasn't able to watch because we've been recording sort of the end of this game, but it looks like Kenny Stills, 2 touchdowns, 106 yards. If you're in a league with me, you do not own Kenny Stills because I have 100% of the shares because I've been all over him, especially. So, I mean, look, I don't know where you were on Stills. For me, look, he finishes as a top 24 wide receiver, I believe, or roughly around there for the last 2 seasons. And he seemed perpetually ignored in fantasy leagues. I think this guy is a must start option week in and week out in any league where you can start a flex or 3 receivers.
I felt a little torn this week. I had Stills as like a wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 option. And the reason I did was because Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler are two good NFL cornerbacks. And Adoree Jackson he kind of got better as the year went on last year. Stills is like the type of guy that I don't feel like he's ever going to be the 120 target guy. I don't think that Adam Gase thinks he's going to be that guy. And when you look at the game splits with and without Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, his targets per game just doesn't go up. So it's just like they have a role for him. He is what he is. And like looking at it now, he saw 5 targets that he turned into 106 yards and 2 touchdowns. So it's kind of like the Jay Ajayi thing. So don't be all results based where it's like, oh my God, this guy had 106 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, that's not going to happen all the time. I mean, in fact, Ryan Tannehill is not going to throw 2 touchdowns most of the time.
That's true.
So Kenny Stills is going to be kind of volatile, but I'm okay with him as a wide receiver 3, especially if Devontae Parker's out, because it gives him a little bit more of a ceiling than I would have liked. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with a guy who, I think I said that he's number 9 in touchdowns among wide receivers over the last 2 years, and I want to say he was number 28 in yards over the last 2 years. So he's been performing, so there's really no reason to doubt him as like a wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 option.
How about this running game, Tags? I mean, Kenyon Drake has 14 carries for 49 yards. Frank Gore, 9 carries for 61 yards. I guess they really were just saving him. I mean, do you lower Kenyon Drake in your rankings given how involved Gore was?
I don't know how much we can take from this game, to be honest with you. With the stops and starts, they stopped the game twice. They started it back up twice. Like, these players just get out of a rhythm. And I just think that, like, it's going to be very difficult for me to take anything away from this game is how I feel. Even when you look at the other sideline with Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis, Deion Lewis obviously crazy outplayed Derrick Henry. But it's just a weird thing. And by the way, Dan, this is news that we could mention because people should probably know. I saw it come through while we were recording, and Delanie Walker went down with an injury towards the end of the game. They put him in an air cast. So they're saying it's like a fracture in his leg somewhere. We don't know where. But this sounds like it could be a season ender for Delanie Walker, which is just brutal. I mean, Corey Davis saw 13 targets, finished with 6 catches for 62 yards here. But again, it was a tough. Xavien Howard has turned out to be one of the, you know, up and coming cornerbacks in this league. So I don't want to take too much away from that. But Delanie Walker going down is that's a big hurt for fantasy owners.
Yeah, that's a huge injury, as is, you know, a lot of the targets that Corey Davis saw were not from Marcus Mariota. It was from Blaine Gabbert, because Mariota left with an injury. So obviously, again, we're recording this on Sunday night. We don't have all the information, but obviously that's going to significantly affect the Tennessee offense, the extent Mariota needs to miss time. But we'll
And Mariota was also bad when he played.
Yeah, well, it's not surprising, unfortunately. I mean, you know, I like Mariota as a player, but, you know, if he doesn't do it with his legs, I don't really see him providing all that much fantasy value. All right, moving on now to beginning the late games. The Chiefs 38, the Chargers 28. I mean, talk about Tyreek Hill. Just go ahead. Just talk about him nonstop. And again, in case anybody is wondering, in terms of there was a who's a player inside like the top 40 in PPR leagues that you wouldn't want to draft at his current ADP, and I picked Tyreek Hill. And I caught a lot of flack from it, so kudos to all the listeners and the readers who called me out on it, because he is just ridiculous.
He's absolutely ridiculous. And it's funny because we did a, I think that we did that featured pros together, and it was like, it was a while ago because I remember, because like 60% of experts said that Tyreek Hill was the player they wouldn't draft where he was going. And I was one of them. However, as the offseason went on and we saw his targets like throughout the preseason and the way that they were using him, it was like him and Mahomes clearly had a connection, and that Sammy Watkins was just behind, and he's just not grasping the offense, similar to the way he didn't with LA last year. So I changed my opinion on Tyreek Hill. I ended up in my final rankings before the season started. I moved him up to wide receiver 11. So obviously that's like, you know, late second, early third round territory. And I wasn't high enough apparently, because Tyreek Hill, 7 catches, 169 yards, 2 touchdowns, and then another touchdown on a kickoff return. So
it's like watching a video game. It really is. And my son was watching it with me. He's 5 years old, the last thing, and he was just like, oh my God, who is that? And I was like, don't worry about it, kid. You're not getting into fantasy football for a couple of years. You're fine. Anything else you want to say on this on the Chiefs side? Anything stand out to you?
No, just that Tyreek Hill's the cheat code.
Yeah, seriously, not a joke. Regarding the Chargers, I mean, again, everybody kind of pretty much did what they expected. Melvin Gordon had a good game. He had, 13 targets and 9 receptions for 102 yards. That's obviously going to get done. What about Austin Eckler, by the way? There was a lot of talk about him, especially in PPR leagues. He had 5 targets, caught all of them, 87 yards and the touchdown. I mean, is he sort of a desperation flex in PPR leagues, or is he not someone to really be concerned about?
Yeah, I think game script had a lot to do with this one, because the Chargers fell behind early, fast. Like, I mean, at the end of the third quarter, I want to say that they were down like 31-12 or something like that. It was a ridiculous blowout. So to know that Rivers threw the ball 51 times and Eckler saw 5 targets, let's dial that back and expect Philip Rivers to throw the ball, you know, 34 times a game. I think that's realistic, maybe 35. So you're looking at an average of maybe 3.5 targets per game. And I don't think that's enough to justify starting him when he's only going to get a couple carries a game. So I think it's a matchup dependent, where if they're going to fall behind, I don't think we could ever project the Chargers backfield to get 18 targets again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's where I'm struggling to find Eckler. One thing I will say from the takeaway here from that is that Travis Benjamin, he dropped a couple passes today. He looked bad, and Mike Williams came on, and Mike Williams looked really good. He caught 5 passes for 81 yards on 6 targets. He's a big body, and I think Rivers needs that. So I think Mike Williams is going to start going forward, and to know that he saw more targets than Tyrell Williams is really telling. So I think Mike Williams, the fact that a lot of us had him as a sleeper in the double-digit rounds, I think that's going to work out.
Yeah, I agree. I think he kind of lost some momentum in the preseason. He got off to sort of the big start early on, and everybody was like, oh my God, look at this guy, I forgot about him. And then kind of he went a little quiet, and especially after they signed Gates, I felt like some people were worried about his red zone stuff. But no, he's a beast. And Philip Rivers just was angry at the time. Travis Benjamin really just terrible. So I agree, Mike Williams definitely a guy to target if he's available. Moving on, Panthers 16, Cowboys 8, kind of another ugly game. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey kind of does it all over the place in both the running game and the passing game. Cam, he's going to run. You know, he's got 58 yards and the touchdown. But anything else stick out to you on the Panthers side of the ball?
Nope. Just that Christian McCaffrey, by the way, 10 carries, CJ Anderson, 7. I didn't understand why people were drafting Christian McCaffrey in the first round. I still don't understand it. And by the way, Christian McCaffrey fumbled again inside the 5-yard line. That's not going to help his chances going forward. So I think it's more of a timeshare than people thought. Again, you didn't see DJ Moore with anything. I had had the Sunday morning chat, I said DJ Moore, I dropped him from my rosters. I didn't feel like he was going to be have any impact just from the get-go. But Greg Olsen, we should mention, Greg Olsen is in a walking boot. So Greg Olsen is likely to miss at least a week. So I think Christian McCaffrey is the one who's going to pick up those targets.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And obviously Olsen, the big deal with him, he missed almost all of last year with injuries. So obviously, hopefully he can get healthy, and that really helps Cam too in the passing game. But the Cowboys, I mean, Zeke finds the end zone, but is there a player on Dallas that is ownable in fantasy leagues other than Ezekiel Elliott?
I know. I mean, Allen Hurns even, and it wasn't even a bad matchup for Allen Hurns this week. He had 3 targets. We can't do that.
No, can't do that. Obviously, as somebody who drafted Michael Gallup frequently in most leagues, sort of with my last pick, was hoping to see some today, but just 1 target. So that really wasn't going to get it done. So I agree. And, you know, people hoping that Dak might, you know, with Zeke, Dak is good. Without Zeke, Dak isn't. No, it's just not going to work. There's nobody to throw the ball to. So I agree. Zeke and move on. Really good game here with Denver, the Broncos 27. And the Seahawks 24. Obviously, I believe Doug Baldwin left with an injury. Again, we're recording this during it, right? Doug Baldwin left. Did they know how serious it is at this point?
Yeah, they're saying it's a sprained MCL, which typically costs players 2 to 4 weeks. And to know that Doug Baldwin, I don't know if this is the same knee injury that he had was dealing with in the preseason. I have no idea, because he was moving somewhat okay, like watching him through the start of the game. And then I kind of faded away from that game and I started watching some other ones. Doug Baldwin, it sucks. There's nothing for me to say. I'm sorry to those of you who I said to draft Doug Baldwin, because obviously I couldn't predict this, but he wasn't a good start this week to begin with. And to know that we didn't even get 1 good start out of him before he goes down, like, that sucks.
But I do want to know what the impact you think might be on the other viable Seattle wide receivers. Tyler Lockett, obviously, 3 catches on 4 targets for 59 yards and a touchdown. And Brandon Marshall, kind of, you know, basically a glorified tight end at this point, catches 3 passes and catches a touchdown. I mean, does Lockett sort of become a viable option most weeks if Baldwin is out?
Yeah, Lockett was going to be on the field regardless in terms of, like, with Baldwin, because Baldwin's, like, so he was a full-time player to begin with. I think this helped Brandon Marshall get on the field a little bit more, and Jerron Brown. By no means do I think this helps the Seahawks offense, because losing Doug Baldwin is a massive blow. But Brandon Marshall was targeted a few times in the red zone. He did catch a touchdown, but he also, there was another one that was called back because they called offensive pass interference. So Brandon Marshall is still getting it done in the red zone. I think Brandon Marshall becomes someone that I'm intrigued with, because he's like the red zone option. And the issue for me, though, the part where I'm so mad about this game, I was all over Nick Vinette in the fact that he was like a sleeper. He was a streamer play at tight end. And then Will Disley gets 5 targets for 105 yards and a touchdown. So I had the whole tight end against the Broncos thing down. Just the wrong one, apparently.
Yeah, he had the long one, the 66-yard reception. I agree, and I was watching that, and I was thinking, like, oh, boy, I'm just going to let Tags talk about that, because you were definitely on Vinette coming in. But, you know, look, trust the process, right? You had the right analysis, so that's all you really need to go with.
Yeah.
On the other side of the ball, look, there was, you know, both Denver wide receivers, but especially Emmanuel Sanders, 11 targets, 10 receptions, 135 yards, and a touchdown. Who's the best wide receiver in Denver?
I think it's Emmanuel Sanders. It was a really good matchup for Demaryius Thomas today as well. So I figured I had them both ranked as top 24 receivers, but the Emmanuel Sanders connection with Case Keenum, it just picked up where it left off. Like, it was exactly what we saw in the preseason, knowing that he moves to the slot more often to get Cortland Sutton on the field. That is obviously beneficial, because slot targets are worth more than perimeter targets. So Emmanuel Sanders, the real deal, man. 11 targets, 10 catches, 135 yards, and a touchdown. Yeah, give me that, dude. But Philip Lindsay.
Yes, what is this? Explain.
Royce Freeman, by the way, they announced him as the starter, and that all worked out just fine. He got 15 carries, ran for 71 yards. A decent day for him. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. But Philip Lindsay, the third down back, also got 15 carries. 15 carries for 71 yards. He did the exact same thing that Royce Freeman did, but then Lindsay also caught 2 passes for 31 yards and a touchdown. This is big, because basically the role that everybody had pinned down for Devontae Booker is essentially Philip Lindsay's.
That's what I'm saying. What happens now going forward? I mean, does this cut into Freeman's value going forward?
It does cut into it, because if the Broncos fall behind in a game, Philip Lindsay is going to be, like, probably their top running back, because he's their best pass catcher. I don't like Devontae Booker at all. I've never liked Devontae Booker. I felt like he should have been cut and they should have kept D'Angelo Henderson, but that's just me. But Phillip Lindsay, they obviously like, and he looked really good. So he's definitely someone to add, and he's someone that I would rather own over Austin Ekeler.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And if you watch that, I mean, he has Ruth on, and he has Terrell Davis's number. So basically, he's kind of guaranteed to be completely successful on that team. That's done. That's really all you need to know going in. But I agree. I was shocked. I mean, I knew he'd be somewhat involved, but I mean, what did Booker get? Two carries?
Yeah, two carries for 4 yards.
He was barely involved. So obviously, if you were owning Booker, you certainly don't need to anymore, but Lindsay is definitely a guy to target. Moving on, honestly, I was pretty surprised by the Washington 24, Arizona 6. I mean, look, Alex Smith looked great. Adrian Peterson looked excellent. If you had told me that, you know, 3 weeks ago, two of the, you know, best players of the week would be Alex Smith and Adrian Peterson, I would have been shocked. But really, it was great. Chris Thompson as well obviously gets heavily involved. Big takeaways from this one?
The Redskins offense, man. Like, If Jordan Reed stays healthy and like Josh Doctson can get his head out of his butt, seriously. So Josh Doctson, obviously, I never thought that his skill set aligned with Alex Smith's, but I thought this matchup would benefit him because they weren't going to use Patrick Peterson to shadow. I didn't get to watch this game, so I can't say too much about that. I need to go and look at who played against who. Did they shadow him with Peterson? Because, I mean, Richardson got 6 targets. Doctson only got 3. So it kind of tells me that Doctson was kind of stuffed in coverage most of the time. So maybe they did have Patrick Peterson's shadow and it was all just BS that they fed us. But Chris Thompson looked really good, like a lot better than I thought he would. It seemed like he was still coming back from that leg injury. He looked really good. Adrian Peterson, by the way, what he did today was fantastic. I know he averages 3.7 yards per carry, but to do that against Arizona, a team that traditionally has, they've stopped the run extremely well. Steve Wilks is a defensive-minded coach coming from Carolina. This was a great performance by Adrian Peterson. He also caught 2 passes for 70 yards. So yeah, Alex Smith, honestly, a better game than I thought he'd have. And that's coming from someone who has high expectations for Alex Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I just didn't. I don't know why. I kind of thought like we'd revert to the old Alex Smith, but I was totally wrong. Actually, I was on the podcast with you guys when the trade went down, and we were kind of excited about it at the time. But at some point, I talked myself out to it. I won't do that going forward. One thing I'll say is a little disappointing effort from Jamison Crowder, a guy who I really liked coming in. And obviously, you know, you had a lot of Chris Thompson, I feel like, is going to take away from Crowder, but it was just 3 catches for 32 yards. I think things will get better going forward. I'm not sure I could say the same thing for Sam Bradford, who, correct me if I'm wrong, Tags, I think he had 11 yards passing at the half. Is that, did I make that up?
It was terrible. I don't know the exact number, but I do know it was low and it was looking very grim. David Johnson, this was a game where Arizona was actually favored. It seemed a little odd to me, but it was in Arizona, maybe playing elite defense. Maybe, you know, I kind of saw it. But David Johnson, 9 carries for 37 yards. Like, David Johnson getting 9 carries is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, they were a mess. They were behind the whole time. Obviously, Fitz, he's going to do what he does. He's got 10 targets, 7 receptions for 76 yards, so that was fine. But look, you know, Bradford will probably play better, but this was kind of a mess. Hopefully it gets better going forward. Tags, anything else to talk about with the Cardinals?
No, man. No, this is fun. It's crazy to run through these games like while they're fresh in the mind. Obviously, there's some stuff to analyze with the snap counts and the targets between all these players, but it's nice to talk about while it's fresh in the mind, and now I get to go watch my beloved Bears take on the Green Bay Packers.
You got it, buddy. Aaron Rodgers in prime time. I hear he does not do well at all. So I think you're going to be just fine in that matchup. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, Tags, I really appreciate you jumping on. Listeners, bear with us. I'm going to learn how the whole hosting thing. We're going to learn the sort of speed and flow that we're going to want to do on these Sunday night podcasts as we try to recap. But for now, thanks for listening and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying 4th season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.